Officer Washington. We'll start with the roll call.
All right, Robert?
Present.
Kelly is absent. Brian?
Present.
Martin?
Here.
And Lloyd?
Here.
All right, and then we don't have anything on the agenda next, so the floor is all your guys's.
Great, thank you. Well, this is workshop two for the month. Last time we talked about critical areas and I can't even remember what else we talked about. It's been a blur since then.
But industrial zones.
Yes, industrial zones, open space, lots of different stuff. Tonight's a lighter agenda, probably less than half the time. I'd be surprised if we're here even an hour. But so we have Ferados Oneza with Burke. Associates that will give us an update on the housing element. There's been some new requirements that she'll walk through that we have to address. And I will say we have to address, but largely you'll see that most of this will happen in the cities with different types of housing. So she'll go through that, but there's new requirements. And then after we go through her housing element and you ask your questions, then we'll switch to transportation. And Spencer Montgomery with JEB Engineers will give us an overview of the transportation element. Again, these are all just working draft documents, so your input, questions, comments can kind of help shape it going forward. And so with that, I think we can go ahead and get started with Oneza.
All right. So you can see my screen, and I hope you can hear me okay.
Loud and clear, Oneza. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here with virtually with you all this evening. I will be going over, like Ben mentioned, the housing element and some of the new requirements. But I also wanted to mention that our presentation is built off of your existing code. So let me see if I can, So our presentation is the housing element updates, and then we'll also do some goals and policy review. I mean, you have the packet, but I'll just go over like what is required as an example. So housing element updates overall, we built off of your existing comp plan. So we have updated that with data and new requirements. So as part of that, we reviewed your existing conditions, updated that, your projected housing needs based on the countywide housing needs that goes with the cities and counties, and then adequate provision. What it means is that the adequate provision to the county and cities would have to have provision to provide housing, and then racially disparate impact. So that's one of the new requirements for policy review and also for the comp plan itself. So looking at your existing conditions, your total population is 217,850 with residents, 17% living in the county, unincorporated rural areas, household size, and then overall, by income group, when we look at it, you have countywide, you have a large number of people living above 100,000 income. Per household, 43%, and then your median income is about 87 grand, and about 29 or 30% people live in that median income range. So that's the breakdown, and then also you carry do have households with disabilities. That's one of the housing concerns when we plan to address. So the county's older residents are increasing, and then your overall occupancy is 94%, and owner and renter occupancy is 68% to 32%, and county does have homelessness as of July 2024.
Sorry, could we go back one slide?
Can you go back a slide, Oneza?
This one?
This one or one before?
One before.
One before.
That one, right.
Yeah. And this slide deck will be out on the Planning Commission website.
Yeah.
Michelle,
thousand.
I'm going to go ahead and close that. I'm getting a reflection off of this window.
Yeah, I'm getting a little one too.
Thanks,
okay.
Should we move forward? Or?
Yep, I think you can go forward.
We talked about this.
That's much better. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we are. We were at. So we did the analysis based on your existing number and projected numbers, and countywide you were expected to have more than 71,000 residents between 2020 to 2046. So what that means is that the county would need, countywide, it would need this 38,000, more than 38,000 housing units. And within the county, when you take the cities out, you are going to need about 5,000 new housing units. Excuse me. So how the county provides housing, like cities would have many different housing types, like apartments, multifamily, and single-family. But within county, we have looked at your existing comp plan, and these are some of the housing types that you have. And I think that you will continue to have these housing types, traditional homes, accessory dwelling units, manufactured homes, farm labor housing, planned developments, multiple detached housing, and some temporary homes. So these are some of the housing, these are the housing types that you currently have.
What are we considering temporary homes?
Temporary homes. What are those? So
the comp plan says that temporary homes are to address rural needs, like sometimes for agriculture purposes, there might be need for housing on a temporary basis. So county has that provision. It's not the same as farm worker housing. Farm worker housing has like a more for geared towards farm laborers during the agriculture. It's allowed in most of the residential zones in the county, but temporary homes is on a temporary basis. That's what the county comp plan is stating.
Is it include like RVs and fifth wheels and stuff that are set up at homes or in parks?
The comp plan is silent about that. So it does talk about manufactured homes in general, but then RVs are not currently mentioned as temporary homes. It's just addressing temporary needs of housing, and especially when it's needed for agricultural purposes.
So maybe like tents or something set up for.
So like to house people in the event of natural disaster type thing.
That could be.
Like she mentioned, like where it's not like dedicated farm worker housing, but it is like temporary setups for farm labor potentially. I don't know for sure. I think maybe we need to look into temporary homes a little bit more and better define
farm labor housing listed up there.
I know, but it's different.
There's temporary and then there's permanent.
Yeah, permanent. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we should look into this and maybe come back with more detailed follow-up on that. And maybe it needs a little more definition
we also have something in our code called a temporary dwelling. So it allows somebody to temporarily live in an RV or in a manufactured home, but it needs to be removed off the site. It's not going to be permanently fixed. So it's a short-term living situation. So that could fall under temporary home.
Like living in a travel trailer while the house is being built.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Or if somebody's needing care and their son or daughter moves in because they can't take care of themselves, and then they stay on the site until the person passes away, and then they remove the RV and, you know, there's only one residence remaining.
Okay.
Or if someone lives there temporarily for years and years. Right.
You're gonna dig deeper into that.
Yeah. We'll look into that a little bit more and do some follow up with you.
Okay.
So is there a zoning? Is there gonna be a zoning for temporary housing? I mean like Richland prefabs and Alphabet Homes.
There's no zoning for temporary homes.
No, it just shows you that with RV parks, long term
stay RV parks.
Yeah. Like the one in Plymouth.
Columbia Sun is one.
Yeah.
You got Corn Rapids. There's
tons.
You got construction workers that pull their fifth wheels everywhere, right?
Yep. Same down. So people that work like in the server farms down in Oregon.
Yep.
There's a group of them that live in that manufactured home park or the RV lot park down by Plymouth.
Mm-hmm. Well, becoming more popular with the pricing houses and everything.
It is. It absolutely is.
Yeah. There's not RV. Popular, but necessity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so, getting close to that myself.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be selling my house and getting out of this state and moving into my RV.
Yeah, till you get yourself something better, right?
Doesn't matter. My RV is just fine.
Yeah.
I can live in a wall tent. I don't need much.
Yeah. Well, we can clarify this in the comp plan a little bit better. It looks like your zoning code has more definition, so we could add that. Okay, then land capacity. So that's another requirement that, I mean, every jurisdiction would have to make sure that you have adequate land to provide housing or provide land for all income groups. But for county, since in general, Growth Management Act does not require county outside of the cities and UGAs to allocate some of the low-income housing bands, so you don't have to provide like 0 to 80% AMI area median income groups. You don't have to show that you have to provide housing in the county. So county is not required to provide housing for that income groups, those income groups. So that's why you don't have to show capacity for higher income groups, because that is not a requirement. So, and then we did analysis to find out that you have capacity for moderate income groups. So let me go back. Any questions on that? And then adequate provisions is another that adequate provisions to identify barriers for housing. So we need to look into your code and your policies to see if there are any barriers for achieving housing availability for moderate income households in the county. So that's the requirements. And then county can also use tools. And we find out that county right now, the way your land is laid out in the unincorporated areas, you don't have any barriers for achieving housing that you are required to provide. And then the racially disparate impact, that's another new law under GMA. And this requires all jurisdictions to revisit the comp plan goals and policies and look at where, not just policies, but overall comp plans to see where if there are any displacement, any racially disparate impact and exclusion in terms of housing. So if there is any, also if your policy has anything that might inadvertently exclude any racial group. So we looked at your numbers based on these three major areas. We looked at the effectiveness of your policies to accommodate housing for all. We looked at the outcome of the policies, such as who benefits and who is burdened by the policies, and then risk level of the policies. So I will show you an example how we have reviewed this, whether it increases the risk of displacement. So there are different types of displacement that we have analyzed and state has identified. But we did look at the policy review and then just to show you an example of what that means. So basically the racial disparate impact has all these five steps that Commerce has identified. So we look at the engage the community, we gather and analyze data, we have done that in this comp plan update, and then we are evaluating policies. This is where we are at. We are looking at the policies with you, and then based on your input, we will revise policies and then review and update regulations. That's going to be the last step.
So step three, the findings are going to be shared?
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Step three, when you do the evaluation and determine there's revisions necessary, I'm guessing we're going to hear about it and see it, right?
Yeah, and in fact, they've given...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mesa.
No, I was going to say, Ben, that we did review, and I'm not sure that if it's going to be shared now or later.
Yeah, so there's been a draft of the revisions to the existing policy. So she's got basically a document that shows all the requirements, what you have currently, if we need to recommend any changes, and if changes, what that would look like. Could we share that with the Planning Commission, that housing policies document?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll send it out in the email.
Great. That'd be great.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is the example.
I wanted to show you an example of how this plays out. This is our existing policy. And then we evaluate and then we made these changes. So you see that all the blue is something that we added, and then the red crossed out those. But overall, this policy is talking about preserve existing viable rural residential areas that protect single family residential areas from incompatible land uses. So there are guidelines that in the Commerce User Guide as well. It's like when you are talking about single family residential uses, you are actually protecting one, but then maybe we could just keep that same intent. But so what we did is we are including various housing types, and then we're saying housing types and protect them from incompatible land uses. So that way you are including, so it's including all different housing types in it. So that's just
a question. Okay. So most of these housing types, are you anticipating those to be the majority of the growth to occur within the UGA? That's something I would expect, and do you know what percentage of the growth that you're projecting is going to be within the UGA versus outside the UGA?
That's a good question. Mesa, do we look at that specifically? I'm not sure we allocated to the UGA versus the other rural areas.
That'd be something good to know, I think.
Yeah, I agree, Ben, what Ben mentioned, that when we did the allocation, we were dividing that by cities and then county, so we didn't have specific allocation for the urban growth areas that are not incorporated within the cities yet. So we have the cities and counties.
That would fall into your traffic and everything else,
yeah,
as far as your growth goes, the roads and everything else, it just funnels on down.
Yeah, it depends though, right, on
where
exactly. So like I would say since the 2018 update, mm-hmm, most of your growth has happened in Badger Canyon,
right,
all of those homes and lots that were built out.
But that was UGA.
No, it was not UGA.
Just outside
that was just outside the UGA, in the, what we call it, the urban fringe, or the urban, what's the,
that was a higher,
the 1 acre,
the higher density that we were allowed within that
rural transition
area.
Thank you. So it's, you might think it's in the UGAs, and there's probably going to be some growth in the UGAs. So we have meetings. Michelle has set up meetings with each of the cities on Monday to go through the UGAs and talk about what are your plans for the UGA cities, what are our plans for the UGA's county, where do we need to coordinate, what kind of growth do we anticipate,
right,
transportation. Spencer's going to be at that meeting too, looking at it from a transportation standpoint. So we're starting to have those discussions, but we haven't got there yet. Oneza's team first just did a broad brush of like, this is the allocation that's going to the cities, and this is what's coming to the county, and where it's going to go. There's still some 1 acre lots that could develop. There are some higher density areas in our rural community centers, like Whitstrand doesn't have a lot of capacity left, but Patterson does,
mm-hmm,
or Plymouth does, and so does Findlay. Right. Larger lots, so you might see some of the growth there. So we're going to make some educated guesses about where the growth is going to go, and then there's still going to be 5 acre developments happening throughout the rest of the county or whatever. 20 acre, 10 acre.
I would like to see more planned unit developments, you know, so you could,
sure,
you could cluster large parcels into smaller lots. So when, yeah, the city does move out there, then you're incorporated, and all of a sudden now,
yeah,
you've got the ability to be able to serve into those, the city,
yeah,
standard zoning and everything else.
Yeah, but how many planned unit developments have you guys seen come into Benton County in recent years?
Well, the last one we saw was probably over there off of City of Richland had now, but it was that John Michaels and the one on the other side of I-82 that, what was his name? He went with the whole, the city of Richland went in there and put in sewer.
Well, I know they started at the county and then they went to the city.
He started with them, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess my point is, it kind of based upon what the market does, right? And what developers are interested
in the county, the last planned unit development was over there off of Clodfelder Road.
Yeah,
and
triple vista or whatever.
Yeah, the one across the street. The guy had 3,000 acres and he put in 21, what, 2.5 acre lots, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. And we had that small one. At,
yeah, the small one right along
23rd and Gum in Kennewick.
Yeah, there's been a couple. Anyway.
So a couple follow-up items for us. One is to look in more detail at temporary housing, and maybe we need to clarify some things within that, and also we can better explain what's included. So that's something that we'll follow up with you probably in the fall.
Yeah, I think defining some of the terms, right, that are used.
Yeah, yep. And then the second is to give you an update on what the plans are for the various UGAs and kind of how much growth and the type of growth we expect to see in those areas and the coordination that happens with the city, and that will also be in the fall.
Okay.
Spencer, can you hear us yet?
I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
And we can hear you.
Was that the end of her?
Well, that was the end of her presentation. Anaza, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to share to wrap up?
No, thank you. Thank you for your input. And then if you find anything in the policy section, let us know that we could update the policies with your input.
Yeah, so that's the third follow-up item, is that when you review the policies and give us some comments, don't worry that you might give us comments by like mid-July, maybe we'll give them 2 weeks to review. And then, but you don't hear from us until September.
Sure.
We're giving you the summer off because we've been stacking them up and
okay. So nice.
And we need some more time to like get more stuff put together so we can bring it to you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Onaza.
All right. Thank you. So all right. I'm taking off now. Thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you later. Have a good evening. All right, Spencer, take it away. Okay. You should be able to share.
All right, I will do that. We'll rely on some technology here.
Spencer's with JUB. He's in Kennewick. Onaza used to be the planner for the city of Kennewick. Okay. What, maybe, I don't know. 15
years ago?
Yeah, 15 years ago. He's been out of consulting since then. But. All right, we can see it.
You can see that? Awesome. Apologize, I could see Onaza's presentation, but I couldn't hear her, but I was able to log in with my desk phone, so my computer didn't have the right settings. So glad I could join with you. I'm Spencer Montgomery. I'm with JUB Engineers here in Kennewick. I help the transportation element to answer some of the questions that were raised by WashDOT and FutureWise during the last cycle. So glad to be with you tonight. I'm just quick presentation for you. The county has a comp plan in place, but I just wanted to just briefly go through what the requirements are for the transportation element.
Hey, Spencer.
Yes.
Real quick, or can you enlarge it on your screen?
I can't.
There we go.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you. We're all leaning forward, squinting, and still couldn't see it.
Still doesn't work.
Well, and that's why I was hoping I would be able to share my screen, because I can point at things when I get to a couple of maps and tables. So,
yeah,
These, there are several requirements. There's two pages. I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but you can read this. You have to identify all the transportation facilities that are needed to serve the UGA and funding if there's improvements needed or to be able to do that. An inventory of air, water, ground transportation facilities, including transit, adopted multimodal levels of service, specific actions to bring the transportation facilities to the established levels of service, and we need to forecast traffic volumes out for 10 years. Projection of state and local system needs to meet current and future demand. And then, let's see here. And a transition plan. This is new.
Can you scroll down a little bit? Part of the slide's cut off.
Uh-oh.
Not there you go. Yep.
Okay. So the last one on this page is a transition plan as required for the ADA, which is American with Disabilities Act. I'll be honest. I was just reviewing these requirements today so that I could report to you what we have left, and this one's been added. So the plan doesn't currently have that in it, and I'll be reviewing what those requirements are to see what all we need to include. Obviously, there aren't a lot of sidewalks out in the rural areas, so it shouldn't have a huge impact on the county, but we'll make sure that we meet the requirements that they have.
Get that done by Monday at the latest.
And then we need to do active transportation, bicycles, pedestrians, things that don't require motors. Description of existing and planned transportation demand management strategy.
Shaky is here.
Future funding, a multi-year financing plan, and the county does a lot of these things every year. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. If there's funding shortfalls, how are we going to meet those? And then a description of intergovernmental coordination efforts. So just briefly, the inventory I mentioned covers all of these different things, the roads, rail, and there's the text has already been there. We've gone through and we've updated the text with respect to improvements that have been made and just to make it current since the last cycle of this. And I should mention over here, the last three bullets, the transit, the non-motorized, the TDM, and to different extents, these other things, obviously roads, those are all coordinated region-wide, and they want to know, remember from the requirements that I just read, the intergovernmental coordination efforts. And so a lot of these are coordinated through the Ben Franklin Council of Governments and the Ben Franklin Transit Planning Processes that the county participates in. And those efforts are region-wide. So there are plans that are prepared for transit, and there's an active transportation plan that are prepared region-wide that we reference in the Bend County Comprehensive Plan. We've updated this map here, which shows the functionally classified road networks. It shows the rail, where the urban growth boundaries are and the city limits. So you can see most of these roads are in the urban areas, but you can see in the rural areas we've got the collectors and the minor arterials shown out there as well. A big requirement, and this is where a lot of our work has gone into this spring, is the level of service analysis. And so there were two sets of analysis, and I'll go into a little bit of detail with this, but there were the Ben Franklin Council of Government has been doing traffic counts, I believe, every other year since 2016. There was some variations during the COVID time. I think they may have skipped one cycle because traffic patterns hadn't stabilized. But so last year they did traffic counts on 48 road segments in Benton County. But in 2024, those road segments were collected, were selected by county staff. We took that forecasted to year 2036, which is the requirement for the Growth Management Act, the comprehensive plan. So we also went to the WSDOT traffic portal and found 54 counts on state highways that represent the network of state facilities within Benton County. Those were primarily available for year 2023, and we forecast those out for year 2023 as well. And I wanted to show you here, here's a map of where the Ben Franklin Council of Government counts were collected. So a lot of these out in the area that has maybe a little bit more intense development than some of the other county areas that there are, but you can see that they're spread out a little bit. Some down here in the Plymouth area and out in the very rural areas of the county as well. So that was the geographic distribution of the traffic count by BFCOG. So then, let me zoom in on this. So these are the 48 traffic counts that were collected in Benton County. We've got all the locations here, and I just want to, I'm not going to walk through and read any of the lines, but I just want to highlight what we did. This shows the direction of travel, whether it's east, west, or north, south, the date of the traffic count, what the directional split was, basically how much traffic is going in one direction out of the total. So here's the AADT, which is the average daily traffic in 2024. What is the capacity of that road, so the directional capacity? And then what's the peak hour, the current peak hour volume and the volume to capacity ratio? That gives us the level of service. And the level of service, there's some notes underneath, but basically, if you're less than 70% volume to capacity, then you're a really good level of service. As that volume to capacity ratio goes up, then your level of service will fall a little bit. Level of service are grades A through F, kind of like our kids get in school. Although in these cases in the rural area, the level of service C is the standard. But I want to show you this column here, the current. You'll notice that all of these are level of service A. So things are going pretty well in the county. And then what we did was we have a methodology that we use to forecast the year 2036 p.m. peak hour. And so we had to approach it a couple of different ways. In the areas of the county that are close to the tri-cities, there is a regional model. And so we looked at what the regional model had in it for traffic volumes and compared that with a 1% per year growth rate, and we took the higher of those. Where we don't have the regional model, we looked at growth rates from the last time that we had traffic volumes and either that or the higher of 1% per year. 1% per year was a number that we came up with during the last cycle working with the Washington State Department of Transportation. They said in the rural areas, traffic doesn't usually come as quickly as it does in the urban areas. So here we've calculated what the future traffic volume is and what the volume to capacity ratio is and then the level of service. And these are all on the county roads. You'll notice that most of these are level service A again, all the way down through. There are a few on the next page.
What about the D?
Except for this one D, and so I wanted to point that one out to you. This is on Dallas Road, south of Private Road, which is, this happens to be just south of I-182. Now, that is the very edge of the urban growth boundary, so D is acceptable in that location.
Question.
But that's something that you want to be aware of. Yes, sir.
So I see one column, it lists, like it says, capacity up at the top. Everything below that in that columns is from what I can see, 800?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we consider to be the capacity of one lane of traffic. And there aren't any county roads as part of this analysis that has more than one lane, I don't think. Now, Dallas Road may be planned to be improved at that point, but I couldn't find anything that showed a widening there. Richland is widening their portion south of this spot. down closer to I-82.
So are you saying that these roads have a capacity of 800?
Mm-hmm. 800 vehicles.
Per hour? What? What is the rate?
Average, isn't it average hour? Daily traffic? What's the...
No, this capacity here, this capacity is an hourly capacity.
Okay.
Okay, so the column to the left of that, what is that
this
column?
One here? This is the current all-day volume. This is the capacity. We probably should swap these two columns here so that it's more clear that this capacity goes with this volume.
So average this volume, daily.
So am I saying that it has a capacity that, that first one has a capacity of 800, but it has 1,942?
Right, that's 1 hour compared to 24 hours.
Yeah.
So the average.
So this column is all day. This column is all day. This column here is the PM peak hour, which is usually your highest volume of the day. What I think we could probably do is swap these two columns here so that it's more clear that the capacity applies to the hour. So when you compare 87 vehicles to 800, that's about a little bit more than 10%. So it calculates out to 11%. So
does that make sense?
No.
So think of the road as being what's the average daily traffic on it, just total.
Okay.
And then in what's the capacity of road at a peak time, 1 hour. So the average daily is like, hey, you might get 1,100 cars on that or 1,900 cars on it over the course of the day. But at any one time, the maximum he's saying is like 87 cars going one direction.
Okay.
So it's 87 not, compared to 800, you got lots of, yeah. That's why you got a
it's current not reaching volume its to max capacity at all.
What's that?
Only 10%.
Exactly, 11%.
Max capacity.
And that, so that's the key is that current volume to capacity ratio.
All right.
Yeah. That's a good question. It's good. Mm-hmm. This is you're going to be having.
Because looking at it, I'd say, whoa. That street needs to be widened considerably.
Yeah, yeah, or another lane or whatever. No, it's just saying that you're actually in really good shape.
Yeah,
okay. On almost all the roads.
Yeah, on almost all of them, you've got is the biggest number I'm seeing here is 374. That's in 1 hour, in one direction. So typically, kind of a rule of thumb is that about 10% roughly. And then it varies a bit, but 10% of the all-day traffic would be happening during the peak hour. So if 10% of 7,200 would be about 720, about half of that is going in the peak direction. That help?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. So we use the same methodology here that we used for WSDOT during the last cycle. And the county staff said, now, that would be great if we could do them in the same way. So I've got another table, and down here at the bottom gives some notes and some description of how we came up with these different numbers. But just so you know, though, that this table looks very much like the one that we did during the last cycle, 7 or 8 years ago. It has a little bit more information in it than the county table that I just showed you. Most of these counts were in 2023, but you can see a couple that were done in 2021 just because of how
Spencer, you're going to need to zoom. You're going to need to zoom in. It looks like.
I apologize. Let me walk through what the columns are here. This is the state route number. So Highway 14 down by the Columbia River, Highway 22 west of Prosser. And so you can walk through all those numbers, I-82, et cetera. It gives a milepost and then a description of where that road covers. This is a WSDOT location ID for the location where we picked up the traffic count for, so that we can go back and find that again when this gets updated next time around.
So let me just jump in and say, so you may be saying, why are we looking at the state transportation system? Well, it's required to look at the state transportation system to see if we're going to do some type of promoting development that might load up the state system. For example, you're familiar with the Broadmoor area in Pasco?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that whole Broadmoor sub-area plan and the population that's planned to go in there, you know, when the city did that plan, they had to look at, all right, what are we going to do to the Road 100 interchange? And do we need to have another interchange? Do we need, you know, they added that loop underneath and there's more improvements that are planned. So Benton County is not going to impact the highway system too much, but we have to look at it and demonstrate, you know, that we looked at it and what the effects are going to be. So like that's why this table.
Like when they were looking at the Red Mountain interchange.
Yes, exactly.
And they came out with the traffic study and said there wasn't enough traffic.
Yes.
To put in the interchange.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is more like, hey, we're going to develop, you know, like, let's say we projected that Plymouth is just going to blow up, you know, going to become, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people down there. Well, then you might have an impact, right? So then you would have to look at the Highway 14 and the interchange off the interstate and see if there's going to be something that's happened. We're not anticipating that, but that's the kind of scenario that you have to, you know, consider. You don't have to consider that specific scenario, but you have to consider what's the growth, where's it going to occur, and all right, you should look at the county roads, but what about the state system?
So if you find one of those or several of those areas that are potentially a problem,
yeah,
do you work with WashDOT so that you can not only expand our capabilities, but then WashDOT expands their capabilities to merge onto these roads or merge off of these roads or whatever?
Yeah, or they might expect the city or the county to help even fund some of the improvements.
Yeah.
So Spencer, you want to address that?
Yeah. Well, so with any proposed development through the SEPA process that you all hear about through some of your work, they're required to do some level of traffic analysis. And in some cases, it might just be reporting how many trips it's going to be. But if it's a significant number of trips, then they'll be required to do a traffic impact analysis, which looks at it in much more detail, obviously, than what we've done here. This is a very high level of analysis. Most of the traffic studies that you're talking about would be done at the intersection level to determine if you have the right intersection control. Is the stop sign good enough, or do they need something that can handle more traffic, like a roundabout or a traffic signal? Or do they need a right turn lane or left turn lane, things like that? So you're exactly right that when development occurs, they are required by the Growth Management Act to mitigate any negative impacts that they may create.
So what determines when it's required? When you have enough people die at the intersection before they go ahead? Or do you,
no, we're
do
planning you here.
Before that happens?
So it's like he said, you'll project traffic counts.
Sure.
And if it gets to a certain level, then you might have to do a model to look at it in either more detail and then mitigation and all that. And you do that up front before you build it.
Well, the reason I ask is up where I live, there's an accident waiting to happen right at Olympia and 397 where you've got 60 mile an hour traffic and stop sign trying to merge with no merge lane to speak of and no lighting.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is a real problem. And there's going to be some serious repercussions if that doesn't get changed over there.
I know that intersection pretty well.
Yeah. Okay.
So how does JUB view traffic circles? Pro or con?
Spencer? Now that has nothing to do with the comp plan, but we'll let him answer it anyway.
Yeah. How do we view traffic circles, like roundabouts, you mean?
Yeah, roundabouts.
Yes.
We think that they're a good tool. They don't fit everywhere, but WashDOT requires that they be looked at any state highway intersection that needs, you know, a higher level of traffic control. So, for example, we've recommended and designed quite a few roundabouts, but we did an analysis a couple of years ago for the city of West Richland, where we had helped them put in a roundabout at Keene Road and Bonding Range Road. More than 20 years ago, probably closer to 25 years ago, it got put in. And so it served its useful life. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze. It served its useful life, and the traffic was starting to back up at the single lane roundabout. And so they asked us to do projections for future traffic 20 years out into the future. And we evaluated what it would take for either a bigger roundabout with more capacity or a traffic signal. And did an alternatives analysis, and the long story short is that I think it was last year that they installed the traffic signal. So they took the roundabout out, and a lot of people said, wait a minute, it works great. But we like that roundabout, but don't take it out. But it had a new roundabout would have needed to have been a lot bigger and would have taken some properties nearby that the city didn't want to impact. And I understand that the traffic signal is working really well. So roundabouts can be a really good tool to reduce crashes, especially serious injury crashes and fatalities, because traffic has to slow down a lot more to go through there.
Whereas yeah, I've seen the plans for the roundabouts from the Yakima River Bridge to Red Mountain Road on 224.
Okay.
And at the major intersections there, they already have the infrastructure there for the traffic lights. And rather than use that, they're putting in roundabouts. And roundabouts, yes, they work good until the fire trucks try to come through and everybody comes to a stop and the fire trucks can't get through. And that was one of the reasons that the city of West Richland explained to me that they took that roundabout out at Bombing Range and Keene, is because everybody would come to a stop and the fire trucks couldn't get through.
Okay.
Well, so enough on roundabouts, but you heard his answer. It depends.
Yes.
And I can think of a spot where I'd love to have a roundabout because it stacks up the traffic.
Yeah.
The road's 45 miles an hour, and the traffic is stacked up, and you can't get through. And if you slowed down that traffic and allowed a roundabout, you might get, you know, more opportunity for people to sneak through. And
you'll never fix stupid.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, that's, then guys like me have no hope, but anyway,
no,
keep moving on.
Saying, it, common sense. If you're in a roundabout, you're not going to stop to block the whole lane for emergency. You know, you got to keep going, proceed, and get off to the right.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
Yeah. Common sense, yeah.
Forgot where it's at.
Yep, yep.
I'm done.
All right, keep going, Spencer. You got 3 minutes left.
Yes.
Three? Okay. Perfect. Anyway, there's some columns here. I see that maybe we need a few more descriptions here. But here's the current ADT that we were able to get off of WashDOT's website. It tells how many lanes they have in each direction, the speed limit, this K factor and the D factor. So WashDOT doesn't have all of the hourly volumes in every case where they've got traffic volumes. But they do have what they call a K factor and a D factor, which tells us what percent of the traffic is occurring during the peak hour and how much of that is going in the peak direction. So we've used this to come up with the current peak hour volume compared to the capacity and then get a volume capacity ratio. And then the levels of service again, we're seeing a whole bunch of A's, a couple of B's, okay. And then we did a very similar way of forecasting for the future that I described for the county roads, and then a future volume of capacity and level of service. I wanted to point out just a couple of them. So in the future, expected that State Highway, Highway 82, in the future, but that's level service C, which is still acceptable. It's got a level service C down here, which is Highway 240. west of the Horn Rapids development, from there out towards the Benton City intersection with Highway 225. And then there are, on the next page here, some levels of service out in the Finley area of Highway 397 that are going to be still acceptable because this is right at the urban growth boundary, but a little bit busier than it is today, obviously. So then I've got one more slide. Here's what we think we have left to do. I didn't write up a lot on goals and policies, but we need to review those a little bit. We have been coordinating with WSDOT, and they have offered some things for consideration. And they've been very good to work with on this. They're not saying, hey, you guys got to do this or that, but here's some things to think about that you might want to consider as you update goals and policies. We're going to provide some support to the EIS process and look at what kind of traffic impact there might be under the different land use scenarios and alternatives that are going to be doing. And then we've got some things that will be done next year by the county and the state and transit that will be newer documents that we will refer to and take a little bit of data out of those. We need to define some multimodal levels of service, and this is something new. And I have a hard time seeing how this is going to impact the county very much, but we'll do some research with the Department of Commerce and what their best practices are for levels of service standards for alternate modes and things like that in rural areas. And then the last thing that I mentioned that I learned about today is an ADA transition plan. I'm not sure if it's even applicable in the county, but we'll do some research on that to make sure that we've met the requirements that the state has for county comprehensive plan. So that was what I had prepared tonight to discuss with you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to do my best to try to answer them.
I have a question. So on the projected traffic on some of these county roads, do you guys look at potential relief for the traffic through like Benton Transit Authority to be able to have bus stops built or park and ride areas or something like that, that they would be able to alleviate some of these congested areas?
Well, those are things that they do discuss like the transit development plan with Ben Franklin Transit. We talk about travel demand strategies, you know, carpooling and things like that. So ways to support those efforts to, you know, reduce the amount of traffic on the roads. Those are all discussed in here, and those are coordinated at a regional level, really. And so the county staff, and there's also elected leaders on the policy board for Ben Franklin Council of Governments. They have discussions on those kinds of topics fairly regularly, I think, and they update plans regularly as well that consider those kinds of improvements, alternate modes, pathways, transit, all that kind of stuff. Does that answer your question?
I think that. Yeah.
Having said that, though, like transit doesn't serve even all the parts of the cities today.
No.
So if you think the county is going to get some relief in, you know, like, you know, or some service even like in Badger Canyon or, you know, even like some of the smaller like multifamily or manufactured home parks where you might see they're not serving those areas, well, right?
So they're running buses to Prosser.
Well, so they're serving within the urban area.
To serve the area.
You're gonna have to get a ride to certain areas, but anyway.
Do you see a light rail service in the future anywhere?
Not in our lifetime.
Yeah. In the Tri-Cities?
It's Seattle. They're still working on it.
Yeah.
And that'd be tough.
$3 billion.
California. Yeah, in the Tri-Cities. I think no.
So you saw his last slide that showed kind of the follow-up items. So those are the action items and follow-up things that we'll share with you in the fall or even early winter, right? Depending upon when things get done and when, you know, what fits into your schedule. So, but this is all, you know, you'll get all of the elements, including the transportation element, at some point, and then you'll get it all together for the review draft.
So we go through the website, we take a look at the information. We have any questions before we have a meeting.
Yeah.
We get in touch with Michelle. Should we get in touch with you? Get in touch with both of you. What's the procedure here that you would recommend, Michelle? How would you like to?
If you have edits.
Yeah, or questions comments? Or, yeah, or you know, run yeah. by you, and then we can
shoot them to me, and then
off to Ben,
or Brittany, somebody. We can pass them on if I can't answer them.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And then we can also talk about your questions when we meet.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But it's great to have them ahead of time, because then we can tailor
absolutely
mm-hmm. yeah, our information yeah. to you. So.
Before you get the final product, for sure.
6:55.
Yeah.
That's all we got for tonight.
All right.
Perfect.
Wow.
Thank you, gentlemen. And we don't have a July or August hearing, but we
thank you, Spencer.
Thanks, Spencer.
Yes, thank you, Spencer.
We will be in touch when our next meeting is to occur, which I assume is going to be sometime in September. That meeting will be in Kenwick at the administration building. So this is our last meeting here. So.
But we also have that subdivision that might go in.
Oh, yeah. So we do have actual planning stuff that we might
come back
for.
In August,
this
you mean
actual planning stuff?
Well, this is long range planning stuff. Okay. We have a current couple planning. Subdivisions that we got in recently, so okay. We may need your attention on those whenever.
So nothing for July. Nothing. Maybe something for August, not sure.
Maybe something for August. That one would also be in Kenwick at the administration building. But Brittany will put it in bright red letters for you so you guys remember.
So
as always, I'll reach out.
Yeah. I'm going to say probably September and October. You can count on meetings for us.
All right. Just in time for elk hunting and deer hunting, right?
Yeah. Well, we can plan around some of that. That's or you great. Can always join virtually. Just get up on a hilltop. Get your phone out.
Gracious.
And don't forget there's muffins in the back. Pull them in your pocket on the way out if you don't want one now.
Okay.
Will you make sure you vote?
Thank you very much. We're going to close the session and the meeting. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.